Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, Episode 56, and it's Colts Week as the Steelers get ready for a nationally televised game on Sunday night, an 8:30 kickoff. And it's a big one for the 6-5 Steelers, Dave. And when we talk about, you know, at various points of the year, we kind of grade games on the scale of, you know, 5 to 10 in terms of being, you know, significant, but another game on the schedule or must wins. This is pretty darn close to must win for me.
Yeah, I would give it a 9.2, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just shy of a 10, I think. I mean, they obviously, depending on how things work out the rest of the season around the rest of the AFC, some of those teams they're battling with in the wild card there. You don't want to get yourself in a situation. I mean, ideally, yeah, you want to win out, but and the margin of error is small. This is a Colts team that, you know, when you look at tape, when you look at statistics, and you marry all those things together, you know, logic tells you the Steelers should win this game, especially with it being at home on a Sunday night, where I believe Roethlisberger is 4-0 in his last four Sunday night games as well, too. So, yeah, not quite a 10, but pretty daggum close to it.
Okay, the injury report, Dave. So, yesterday, no Heath Miller, no Will Allen, who practiced Wednesday, did not practice Thursday, and one more I'm missing.
Sean Spence.
So, probably the likelihood here is that Heath and Sean Spence don't play. So Spence has been dealing with this hamstring strain. They listed him as limited on Wednesday, but you can pretty much rule him out as down for sure. I would probably lean to think Heath is out, Dave. I mean, he couldn't come back into that game. You know, we don't know if he has any cracked ribs or how serious it is, but he is one tough dude. And if he's not practicing Wednesday and Thursday, it probably doesn't look good.
Yeah, and you know, the injury report probably, let's see, we're recording this 11:45 in the morning Eastern time, so probably during the show, maybe we'll get the Friday injury report.
There is a required all NFL personnel conference call today at noon for every team in the NFL to go over player safety issues, and I'm sure they're going to get into this concussion stuff. So I know all the teams have to adjust their daily schedules, and so Steelers probably have wrapped up practice already.
Yeah, and we'll see about Heath. And yeah, like you said, you would you would easily guess that maybe there's a cracked rib or maybe some sort of cartilage or something damaged there. And it'll be surprising if he is able to work Friday. And boy, you know, you're talking about a guy that very rarely misses games. It's Heath Miller for sure. Sean Spence, yeah, we'll see what happens with him. Not a huge loss. I mean, obviously, you'd like to have him in there for special teams and to perhaps maybe give you some snaps in there, depending on what happens with Ryan Shazier, who, by the way, practiced full on Thursday with that concussion.
Which is obviously great news. I mean, I have to say I'm shocked. You know, we saw what happened with Shazier. You guys have a great gif of it up on the site. And, you know, he said yesterday that he thinks he was momentarily knocked out. So, look, they went through the protocol. I'm not questioning at all the sensibility of this. I'm just saying it's really good news that he was able to go limited Wednesday and full on Thursday. And if he goes today, then he'll go on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Will Allen. There was a new addition on Thursday with an ankle. Don't know if it's right or left ankle, or the same one that prevented him from playing two or three games there early on in the season. If you're a Steelers fan or if you're a longtime listener to this podcast, regardless, you probably don't view that as a big deal, because I know a lot of our listeners are probably hoping that Robert Golden would get the start anyway, and that very well could happen. So we'll watch Will Allen.
That includes me, by the way.
Yeah, watch his status on Friday here. Matt Spaeth was limited on Thursday with a knee. Martavis Bryant limited with a hip. You know, one would think both those guys finished out the game, Sunday against the Seahawks. So, you know, maybe just bringing them along slowly. We'll know for sure here in a little bit. Mike Mitchell was full with a knee. Ryan Shazier, concussion, full. Roethlisberger, of course, full for a second consecutive day. And James Harrison, full on Thursday as well with a knee. So, really, the only guys that look like in jeopardy of missing the game are Heath Miller, Sean Spence, and Will Al.
Okay, Dave, so a couple things for you. One is, in talking to some of the Steelers beat writers over the past couple of days, they're not allowed to report on exactly what happens in practice. But I will tell you, there is a sense among a couple of these guys that the Steelers are going to roll with the same nickel package that they've rolled with all season long, and that it won't be Brandon Boykin getting the start in place of Antoine Blake. It'll be Blake, and maybe Boykin gets some snaps, but that they may start that way. Now, I got to tell you, this would really surprise me. And I know it will disappoint a lot of Steeler fans. I don't have any idea. I don't see them practice, so I don't know the answer to this one way or the other. But it is, I had thought when we spoke on Wednesday, it was my assumption that it was all basically a lock that Boykin would be the slot corner and William Gay would move outside. I don't feel that way now.
Yeah, I'm trying to read back through, boy, a lot of quotes, you know, all the way back to Tuesday with Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler, you know, has his weekly, what was it, Thursday morning talk with Missy Matthews, and then Butler met with the media again Thursday afternoon. And when you go through all these quotes, nowhere does anyone guarantee that Brandon Boykin is going to not only see time, considerable time. So one would think, and that's dangerous, especially when it comes to me, one would think that Boykin's going to play. And how much, we'll see. Here's the only thing that I think we know right now, David. William Gay is going to play every snap. that's a given. Now, whether or not he plays every snap, mixes in some slot snaps with some outside snaps, we don't know. And the only other thing that I can really come up with is I think we're going to see both Antoine Blake and Ross Cockrell in this game. Now, obviously, neither one of those two players play in the slot, so you can rule that out from happening. The other thing that kind of Keith Butler has driven home in his two interviews is that they probably need to start giving Antoine Blake some rest, because he plays some, basically on the field almost every defensive snap and special teams on top of it there. So does that mean that he's going to get some rest, regardless, of what happens? I don't know. I think, like I said, you're going to see Cockrell and Blake both play outside opposite William Gay. And I will be surprised, I will be shocked if Brandon Boykin does not see some playing time in this game. Now, how much, we don't know. Here's one other thing that Butler kind of hinted at on Thursday. Basically said that they don't want Boykin out there if they think the Colts are going to run the football. So that's pretty telling right there as well, too. So does that – here's my theory in short. You'll see Blake in base outside on obvious, potential rundowns in base. I think you'll see Cockrell outside in obvious third and – second and long, third and long, obvious passing downs in the nickel. And I think you'll see Brandon Boykin in the nickel in obvious passing downs.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see if they can coordinate and get that organized. It shouldn't be overly complicated, but that's a good thought. And so we'll see how it plays out because – we've heard Butler say we're going to have to do some different things. We've heard Boykin's name mentioned multiple times now by Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler. So we expect to see him on the field. So, Dave, if Boykin – well, okay, let me go back.
Say it. You want to.
If Boykin plays and plays well, is that going to irritate the fan base even more?
Absolutely it is. It's a good problem to have, but everybody will be out there saying, well, why didn't this happen all along? You know, there's still a group of the fan base, David, that feels Mike Tomlin's playing favorites here, that he's got something against Brandon Boykin, that there's, you know, that there's some sort of, you know, kind of rift there. I'm not buying it. Now, does Tomlin play favorites? You know, well, you can look at Will Allen, and yeah, I think there's an obvious there. Is Blake a favorite of his that, you know, he just doesn't want to sit down? If Mike Tomlin's making his decisions based on his Christmas card list, then there is indeed a problem. I mean, you have to roll out the best 11, 12 guys week in and week out that give you the best chance to win. And in the last, you know, we talked about this, I think, the other day, really since the Kansas City Chiefs game, it's obvious that not only is Blake playing with that casted thumb, I think, and I think Alex wrote about this well too, when the season gets over, I bet we're going to hear about Blake having multiple surgeries on maybe a shoulder as well too. So, to, you know, short answer to your question is, yeah, if Blake goes out there and he plays well, or let's just say, you know, really maybe not a huge factor, but the Steelers win and they don't give up a lot of explosive plays, then, yeah, you're definitely going to hear it. Now, I want to throw it back to you on the flip side. What happens if Blake goes out there and gets torched, you know, over the scene for a couple of big plays?
Blake or Boykin?
Boykin.
You said more of the same. I mean, you know, I don't think there's any downside in putting him out there the way the Steelers' pass defense has played. And this gets to a larger question, Dave. If I had to – you know, we preview other teams every week, and we go through this, and we look, and we talk about, you know, their weaknesses. If you were previewing the Steelers' defense, and I'm just looking at the stats here, and defensive stats, you know, we can debate how meaningful they are and what exactly they tell us. But, you know, the Steelers don't have a guy with more than 5 sacks, and that guy's Cam Hayward. They don't have a guy with more than – they have one guy with more than two interceptions, and that's Mike Mitchell with 3. I mean, you look at – we talk about this team and where they're headed, and even, you know, looking past 2015. And if I ask you who's a playmaker on defense and I say don't name Cam Hayward and don't name Ryan Shazier, is there a name to say?
I think Mitchell fits that mold, that description so far this season.
You do? Okay. I'll give it to you begrudgingly because I think there was a lot made about Mike Mitchell in the first half of the season, but I don't think he's been very noticeable the last 3 games. I don't think he's done anything particularly well. He does have the 3 picks, so that's something. You look at the tackles, and Lawrence Timmons leads the team with 80 tackles, and then it's Blake Mitchell and Will Allen, and then Ryan Shazier is right after that. And, you know, some of this is the nature of the game, but it's just this defense needs to find playmakers. And, you know, Jarvis Jones has come on a little bit the last 3 games. Maybe he's had the best stretch in his career. Bud Dupree's still a rookie, but Bud Dupree, you know, he's not, you don't see him. I mean, look, he has, on the season, he's been involved in 20 tackles, 14 of them solo. He does have 4 sacks, but, and I don't want to take away, you know, because somebody didn't block him, he got a sack. He has 4 sacks. I mean, you still have to make plays, but he really hasn't made plays this year. We know James Harrison's on the backside of it. Arthur Motes is a guy. You know, I just keep coming back to this, the fact of this defense doesn't have playmakers. If we were on somebody else's show and they were asking us about the defense and said, you know, who should we be worried about? So you block Cam Hayward and take care of the guys, the inside backers, and you're probably in pretty good shape.
Yeah, it's not intimidating at all.
Right.
And yeah, if you block Cam Hayward and you handle that fire X, you know, that twist, in the middle there when they do blitz. And if you occasionally look out for the safety blitz, you're going to be fine.
Yep.
You know, you're going to be able to pass the football. And especially if you get them in some cover three looks, because they don't play a lot of, I mean, they obviously, and they don't, they really don't have, you know, people want them to play more press coverage, but I mean, let's face it, they don't have the personnel to do that. I mean, they just don't. I mean,
Let me ask you a question. We both know Keith Butler's not getting fired this year. Is Keith Butler's job, it's the only time we talk about somebody's job being on the hot seat is Mike Tomlin, and that's ridiculous. He's going to, if you had to make me bet whether he'd be the coach in 2020, I'd say absolutely he will be. Is Keith Butler, are we going to have this conversation next year if the defense is the same that, you know, they might have to think about a shift? I mean, Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler have known each other a long time, and I'm sure Mike's not in any hurry to kind of move away from Keith Butler. But a year from now, would that be something that we'll be talking about?
Well, let me throw it back to you this way. Do they have the personnel to run what they're running, regardless of who the coach is?
Yeah, and I guess that is kind of the larger question that I was maybe thinking about was, if you change coordinators, do you change scheme somehow?
Maybe more aggressive. But I mean, it's all about getting pressure. It's a quarterback driven league. Now we say that week in, week out. If you face teams that get the ball out quickly, the only way to defend that is to put people up on that line.
So I guess are we blaming the secondary too much? Because we heard that now from Keith this week saying, this isn't just the secondary. Are we not putting enough heat? Look, Stephon Tuitt has been somewhat invisible the past couple of weeks since he got dinged up. He hasn't been as much of a factor as he was early in the season. McClendon's not on the field that much. We know the edge guys haven't been impressive. I mean, not one of them has been impressive. So, I think we rightly are killing the secondary, particularly because of the tackling issues. But maybe we should be, knocking the other guys just as much.
The way you get the quarterback to hold on to the football, longer
cover
than he
pucked. Cover a little
bit. Right, just cover them a little bit or get them in less than ideal down and distances, right?
Which they did. Five times they convert third and 10 and longer last week. I mean, that's insane.
Exactly.
Three times on one drive.
And that's rare for them to do, to be able to do that, right? To get them in those situations.
Yeah, right.
That many times. We've talked several times over the last couple of weeks of failures on first down. Teams come out, in my opinion, with the thoughts of maybe trying to pass more than run on first down because they can. If 6 yards is there for you, why wouldn't you take it? And they just don't have the personnel top to bottom on defense, I don't think. They really, really don't. And I think they tried to disguise that a little bit by playing some more cover two this year. Maybe they haven't played cover two enough, on the flip side, maybe they're not dropping Shazier enough as opposed to Lawrence Timmons. Zone defenses will drive you mad, especially if you can't get pressure on the opposing quarterback in favorable down and distance situations. We just don't see guys following people across the field, haven't for years. So I guess, in a roundabout way, are you suggesting that this team needs to go to switch to a 4-3? Well, if they do that, they haven't drafted the personnel for that, right?
I'm not suggesting they switch. I'm just wondering if we're here a year from now, if there's going to be a rethinking of what's going on, because it's been, what would you say legitimately? It's been 3 bad years of Steelers defense, or 3.5 bad years?
Oh Lord, yeah. Well, if you look at sacks and turnovers, right? You go back further than that.
We talk about how few interceptions they've had the past couple of years. Well, you look again, and all of a sudden, that number was – they were compiling numbers early in the season, but there's been a bit of a dry spell of late, and they still only have 9 interceptions. And what was it each of the past 2 years, it was 10 or 11?
I figured you might ask some questions, and I had some stats pulled up on this. Sacks so far this year, 30.
33. Was it 33 last year?
33 last year, 34 the year before that, 37 in 2012, 35 in 2011. The last time they had 40 or more sacks in a season was 2010. And, oh, by the way, that's the last time they went to the Super Bowl, right?
Okay.
48 sacks. They've got 30 so far this season. Are they going to get
they should get to a game, so that'll get them 40.
Okay, so they should hit the 40 number, which still in today's NFL
– that's pretty good.
You know, not bad. I mean, 7 more than last year. Here's what we're not seeing, though, right? We're not seeing the strip fumble turnovers,
no,
right?
None of them. So do you have the interception and fumble recovery numbers?
I have interceptions here. Interceptions so far this year, 9. Last year, 11. The year before that, 10. The year before that, 10. The year before that, 11. Oh, yeah, 2010, David, 21 interceptions.
Huh. So we're seeing, you know, yeah, so, okay, so 2010, and since that time, not much. Now, will they get 11 interceptions? Will they get 2 more this year? Probably. I'm betting they don't get to 15. So we're 3/4 of the way through the season, they're at 9. So you just take, you know, 3 more. So the expectation would be 12.
Do you ever wonder with other NFL games when they go on and we're able to watch those when the Steelers aren't playing, you see just a bad turnover, bad decision, a ball thrown poorly.
Yeah, yeah.
Why does that never seem to – why are we not talking about, oh, man, the Steelers got a gift there?
I mean, the only one I remember kind of thinking was a horrible decision was Andy Dalton's throw that Blake picked off in the end zone, and that wasn't a simple play. I'm trying to pull up the numbers on the fumbles, and you look at the fumbles.
I've got them. I got them here. Fumbles and fumbles lost.
6. Is that right? 6.
I lost.
I don't know. Tell me.
Here's what I've got. Fumbles lost or 9 recoveries so far this year. 10 last year. 10 the year before that. 10 the year before that. 4 in 2011, 14 in 2010.
Okay, so we're just seeing, I mean, it's just clearly delineated. 2010, the numbers are so dramatically much, so much better than anything we've seen since then. And this year, we might see an uptick in some of these things, but largely in line with what we've seen 2011 through 2015.
Where's the help coming from next year? Where is the reason to think that what we see right now is going to get dramatically better?
Okay, here's all I can offer is Sanquez Golson comes in and can contribute right away. So he's a guy who becomes a playmaker. And, you know, look, they drafted him in the second round, so you can have some expectations for him. He's not a wild card. He is a second-round draft pick. And he is a guy with a track record of being able to catch the football in college. Now, okay, we know his size is an issue. Okay, that's why he was there in the second round. If he was 6'1", he would have been a top 10 pick. Okay, so that's one. Two is Ryan Shazier stays healthy and performs as we've seen him perform. And we'll have 5 games the rest of the season to kind of get more of an evaluation. Hopefully he stays healthy through the rest of the year, and we'll see what he does. That's two. Three, Jarvis Jones continues on the trend he's been in the last couple weeks. And he becomes a guy where you say you want to pick up that the 5th year of his rookie deal because you think he is he actually can be a playmaker. And 4 is Bud Dupree gets more experience and continues to become a better player, and he solidifies that outside spot and can be a guy you can count on for 6 to 8 sacks, 8 to 10 sacks, kind of for the next couple of years. And then 5. You hope that you get some help in the draft or free agency. You get one more player. Now, if you have a secondary next year that's I can't even say Cortez Allen's name. So, you've got Mitchell. You've got Mitchell at safety, and the rest of the secondary is kind of up in the air next year. I don't know who's going to be where.
William Gay, who currently isn't under contract, will be another year older.
Yep.
I mean, there's no way that you can't bring him back, in my opinion.
No, and do you sign him to a two-year, $8 million deal? I don't know that he's going to get more on that in the open market, so I don't think you're going to be in a bidding war, but.
Yeah, I mean, you got to pay him, though.
But $8 million for, $4 million a year. Are you underpaying him at $4 million a year?
I think that's a market price for him for his age, 3 to 4.
So, that's the – I mean, Haywood and Tuitt, fine. We can roll with that. And so you get – that's a lot of guys who need to step up and play better. And then you're hoping for one or two guys, you know, you're hoping for basically a couple new guys to contribute right away. And I don't think it's a stretch to think Golson can do it. He's been, assume he's been sitting there in every meeting and he'll have some sense of the defense. He obviously can't practice, so he doesn't have any of the reps. But hopefully he's a reasonably smart kid who can pick that up. And
that's a lot of hope there. And where's our, I mean, you're sitting there hoping for guys to get eight, you know, your edge rushers to get eight sacks. What happened to the days of us being able to pencil in double-digit guys?
Yeah.
Will Jarvis, I mean, if Jarvis hits double digits during...
In his Steeler career.
In his Steeler career. It's not funny. Quit laughing. called that one, didn't I? He has been better, but better compared to what I mean.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a low bar. He's got two. I mean, the Steelers, you know, you look at this, the Steelers, you know, the ends five for Hayward, 4.5 for Tuitt. And there's nobody else. I mean, Bud Dupree has four. Shazier has three. I mean, it's, you know.
How many times during the game, David, are we saying, man, just not getting pressure on the quarterback, just not, I mean, not getting the knockdowns, just the quarterback just isn't fearful back there, you know, taking those hits that they did back 2010 and before. That's why you see this team invest picks early on in drafts in front guys, right? Because you know, unless you've got a lockdown corner, and even if the Steelers had a lockdown corner and drafted one, A, how quickly is it going to, you know, how soon will they be able to get that guy on the field? B, are they going to change schemes to, you know, to take advantage of that,
yeah,
you know, on top of it? And who's going to help them over the top? Because, I mean, Darrell Revis, you know, those types don't come along very often. And if you are going to put a guy on an island, you better have a safety back there that can cover a lot of ground on top of it. And I know I understand the frustration of people listening saying this next year we absolutely have to get a cornerback first round. But let's look at it right now. Where are the Steelers likely going to be drafting in the first round? 17th or lower?
Yeah, 16 to 25.
Okay. I mean, how many times, you know, usually two or three corners are off the board by then. Do you really want this team taking a chance at the third corner off the board? I mean, go back and look at history. There's, you know, those guys bust, and the Steelers just have not been a team that likes to, you know, spend early picks in their secondary. And I was shocked they took a corner in the second last year, even though I had penciled in, you know, the kid out of Wake Forest, Kevin Johnson, going to the Steelers. You know, my tape evaluation must have been right on because he was off the board before the Steelers even got a chance to take him. Now, would they have taken him?
Yeah, Trey Waynes went to Minnesota, and Johnson went to – where did he go?
Houston. Houston.
Right.
And, you know, and that's a 3-4 defense, right?
Yep.
With Romeo Crennel, I mean, I know they play some – you know, everybody
plays. J.J. Watts all over the place.
Yeah, but I mean, you just got to have the guys up.
They should drop J.J. Watt.
Yeah, or get some of his DNA.
Okay, so all right, that's that.
Boy, we painted a nice picture on this Friday, didn't we? everybody's probably about to kick their chairs out from underneath them.
A couple dogs just got stepped on. Okay, so let's let me ask you my second question for the day.
Happy Friday today, everybody.
Who is the Steelers' MVP?
Offensive, defensive, anybody?
Anybody.
Man, Antonio Brown, just what a difference it is when the ball's in his hands, man.
Hey, to me, this is exactly why I asked the question. The answer can't be Antonio Brown because of last week. You can't get shut down. You can't get completely shut down. It's a no-brainer. It's Ben. Now, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I might have said maybe it's Antonio Brown. But Richard Sherman did a job on Antonio Brown last week.
Yeah, he did. But on the flip side, too, how many times do we joke about Ben won't throw you to football unless you're college open?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. But I don't think that's true of him and Antonio.
Man, we are just full of good
positive things.
Positive stuff, and that's not a knock on Ben. It's just who he is.
I think it's Ben, but yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely Ben.
Yeah, you could make a good argument for Ben, absolutely. But, I mean.
But Antonio Brown got player of the month.
Yeah.
So, he, you know, I'm trying to remember last year. I think only two players, this is straight from memory, so somebody can correct me. I think only two players were unanimous all pros, right? J.J. Watt and Antonio Brown? Or was Antonio Brown one vote short?
Oh, man.
I think he was one vote short now that I think about it.
Yeah, I think he was. Wasn't the guy from Dan? I wrote about it, too.
Yeah.
One of those guys didn't think he was.
Yeah, yeah.
Pompey.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So is Antonio Brown unanimous first team All Pro?
I don't see how he's not.
I mean, who are the other guys? Who would be in the conversation? Julio Jones at the beginning of the year, but he's done. You know, he hadn't done anything. So, you know, and their team's getting smoked. I mean, some other guys. You know, Nuke Hopkins is having a really good season.
Yeah, Beckham.
Oh yeah, Odell Beckham Jr. It'd be interesting to see if they name three receivers who the three. Let's take a guess today on if they go All Pro three wide receivers, Antonio Brown, and who's I don't know what the stats look. I'm going to pull the stats up for wide receivers, but are Beckham's stats good enough? I mean, he certainly gets the PR and he gets makes the highlight reel catches.
He's already got what? Here you go. 72 catches, 1,005 yards, right?
Beckham.
For Beckham, yeah, nine TDs.
Those are good enough.
Nuke, 81 catches, 1,081 yards, 9 touchdowns. The thing that sticks out the most with Julio and Antonio Brown is that Brown has 5 touchdowns and Julio 6. has 6.
Okay, so that's your group of 4 right there. It is those 4.
Somebody's going to try to shoehorn Larry Fitzgerald in there, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Because of what he does with a football, not in his hands, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. I mean, look at Allen Robinson's numbers, 927 yards, 16.9 average. He's got the highest average of just about anybody.
Yeah, 55 catches.
He's not going to make it. And, you know, Calvin Johnson, obviously last night, another great catch. But okay, so my vote, I think it'll be Julio Jones, but I would vote, from what I've seen, I would say Antonio Brown and probably take DeAndre Hopkins. It's one of the guys is going to be left out. It's not going to be Antonio Brown. Either DeAndre Hopkins or Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be left out, and I guess probably Nuke will just because of the name recognition.
Yeah, I think I saw some show last day or two talking about if he played in New York, he'd get a lot more run than he does in a small market like Houston.
Yeah,
people would know
Houston a small market, but yeah,
right.
Who was the fifth guy we named? Because I'm not seeing him on the.
Oh, you got Julio, Antonio, DeAndre Hopkins, Odell, and maybe Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, yeah.
I
that's
think
a good group right
there.
That's covered. That's your All Pro is covered with those names, for sure.
I mean, you're not going to put. AJ Green still is just 965 receptions, 909 yards, 6 touchdowns.
So who's your All Pro quarterbacks? Tom Brady first and Carson Palmer second.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And then who are the all-pro running back? Is Adrian Peterson's obviously going to be number one. Is Doug Martin, what's a muscle hamster?
Yeah, 1,038 yards, 3 touchdowns already. Gurley's going to win rookie of the year, right?
Yeah, he's a lock. Well, I mean, there's one other guy in that conference.
John.
Who?
You're not going to put Jonathan Stewart in there, right?
No chance.
I mean, you're not going to put Chris Johnson.
DJ's on IR. He's not going to play in the rest of the regular season. So that's a done deal. Those are the three guys in the conversation.
I guess you could make an argument for Freeman because of his receptions and all, but I mean, that's a hard sell. He's missed some games too.
Yeah, that one was relatively easy. Obviously, Le'Veon's out, and there's another guy in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. Who am I forgetting? Along with Gurley.
Running back?
Yeah, I think it's a receiver. I'm going to have to look at the draft class.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Steeler MVP is Ben offensively. Your defensive MVP. How about Rookie of the Year? Who's Steeler Rookie of the Year?
Well, it has to be Bud, right?
Yeah, I mean, unless Jesse James does something crazy the last 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah, that I mean, crazy is him getting 30 snaps a game. 30 snaps a game is crazy for him right now. I mean, to expect anything.
He got 30 in that Oakland game, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that. I think we talked about that as well, too. I mean,
first of all, we ignored Winston and Mariota in our Rookie of the Year conversation. I don't think they'll pass Gurley, but they're in the conversation. I mean, they're having decent season. And Amari Cooper was the other one. Amari Cooper. He's fallen off just a touch.
Yeah, I think it's Gurley. Gurley's just – he's fun to watch, just like he was in college. Let's see. What direction now that with the upcoming game?
Ruined the season.
Yeah.
Mark Cooper. He's
we got an email back from Jeff Berg as well too. He still thinks we're nuts for thinking the Steelers can win four of their next five years.
People thinking we're nuts is not anything new. So
yeah,
we're good there.
This upcoming game against the Colts, you look at the Colts on paper.
Nothing
you look
scares
at their,
you offensively.
No, I mean, T.Y. Hilton can stretch the field and run away from you. Definitely a guy you have to get on the ground quick. The loss of Ahmad Bradshaw is pretty big. They're pretty much a power running team with Frank Gore. You know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust with him. They tried to let Matt Hasselbeck manage the football game by staying in favorable down and distance situations. You know, he has good deep stats this year, but I mean, we're talking about a limited, limited selection with him so far as well too. Now, I would expect them to roll out some two tight end sets, out there occasionally. But if I'm them, I try to get Andre Johnson on the field. Bless you, Andre Johnson on the field along with T.Y. and Moncrief, and I try to run some 11 personnel, and I try to catch these Steelers in cover three zone situations there, and hope my offensive line can stand up. But if you want to talk about a offensive line, and how many times this year and over the last couple of years have we said, man, this is an offensive line that's really banged up. The Steelers really should be able to take advantage of it, and it just doesn't seem like we have. I think the game against the Chargers, back in week five, it was actually noticeable them just, abusing, the lesser talent across from them. This is they're going to be probably in a situation for that to happen again Sunday night against the Colts with that being as their offensive line. So they could have two, maybe three starters out in that game. So that's something to pay attention to. More than anything, if the Steelers, and I think we talked about this the other day, if they can get a jump out to a quick lead and get the Colts to press offensively, that's when things are going to happen. That's when the turnovers are going to happen. That's when the three and outs are going to happen, that type of thing. So the worst thing the Steelers can do is what we seem to go through this every week, is they let teams hang around until the fourth quarter. And if you do that, all bets are off at that point. I don't think Frank Gore is going to rip them running the football. I don't think I don't consider Kobe Fleener and Dwayne Allen as big threats. This might be the easiest set of tight ends that they've faced, so far this season.
It's shocking to me Allen only has 12 catches. See, I think he's really good. And I thought Fleener would be a better player than he's been. He's a good player. I thought he might be, a Pro Bowl caliber tight end. I don't think he's that.
But, it still doesn't mean that you don't try to line him up in the slot and use him a la kind of like Jimmy Graham, right?
Yep. For sure. That is how you should use him.
But, I mean, look, the Steelers struggle with those verticals, right? Those everybody go deep. not too hard to draw up sometimes. But, obviously, Matt Hasselbeck would like more of a controlled passing game. But I think they're going to mix it up. I think you're going to see some 12 personnel in there with them, possibly some 22 stuff, and then, of course, the rest of it being some 11 personnel. How the Steelers handle that, it'll be interesting. We already covered the cornerback situation and all like that. If they don't give up the explosive plays, I think you have to make Matt Hasselbeck you know, drive 13, 14 plays down the field to get you. But here's the thing. He's patient enough to do just that. But I think that's the best chance of shutting him down completely. I mean, they're obviously going to try to run the football with Gore, and I don't think they're going to have the success with that offensive line of theirs. They're just going to have to do a better job in situational football, as Mike Tomlin talked about earlier in this week. You know, like to see them do a better job on first down and get them into the Colts thinking that they have to pass on second and long situations here. I mean, anything to add about that? I mean, they're not an overly dangerous offense, in my opinion.
They're not an overly dangerous offense. I totally agree. And here's the thing: T.Y. Hilton is a playmaker, man. He can get downfield. He's been a good receiver, you know, since he came in the league. I was surprised he went, you know, I think he was a third round pick. He's averaging over 16 yards a catch. That's, you know, amongst the best in the league. But to me, Ahmad Bradshaw breaking his wrist and being out is a big deal. I think, you know, when I think of running backs who run hard, we saw one in Thomas Rawls for Seattle, just a bruising runner. I think Chris Ivory is a bruising runner. I think Ahmad Bradshaw is a bruising runner. He's not as big as a guy like Rawls, but he is a really hard runner. So I think there's a, you know, obviously there's a benefit there to the Steelers that he's not available.
I would like to see if Hilton lines up in the slot. I sure would like to see Boykin following.
Yeah, no, that, and they, you know, they'll move him around. And look, Moncrief's the bigger guy, and Andre, and so that, you know, they can move T.Y. around. So that will be fun to watch to see how they do that. And then you look at him defensively, and Robert Mathis is, you know, he's in the James Harrison phase of his career. I think he has 4 sacks. He's a, you know, he's a good player. He's not a great player anymore. The strength of their team defensively is in the secondary. Vonta Davis. I will tell you, the Steelers torched Vonta Davis before he got hurt in last year's game. He only played about a quarter and a half before coming out of the game, but he was awful. I mean, they come into the game, they were talking about how he is the, you know, he's the new Darrelle Revis, and it was not pretty for him in that game. And I don't know how much of that was related to injury beforehand, before he went out of the game. So I won't kill him too much there. I don't know if Mike Adams is going to play. But, you know, the guys they have in the defensive secondary are solid. But, again, you know, this is an average football team, and this is a game – look, the Steelers should win this game. They're the better team. They just have to manage to not give up, you know, 28 points. They got to play better defensively.
Yeah, and look, you talk about their secondary. I don't think Greg Toller's all that, and that's going to be who's playing opposite Vonta Davis. And in Vonta Davis's defense, you know, playing a lot of – last year in that game, you know, especially that first touchdown that Ben threw to Marcus Wheaton, that was an out and up and against cover three, and the underneath guy is the one that really got deked by the Ben Roethlisberger kind of pump fake there on that one. I'm trying to remember if it was Vonta that got those two corner routes. Those pylon, there was a touchdown, a tremendous touchdown grab by Antonio Brown in that game. I can't remember if that was before or after Vonta Davis left. And then another one to Martavis Bryant, almost the same. One was 8 yards out, one was 2 yards out. 2 yards out was, I think, to Martavis Bryant in that game last year. And Toller's just a guy opposite him. Even if Mike Adams plays, he hasn't played in a couple weeks, I don't think. So, you know, he's probably not going to be 100%. If Clayton Gathers has to play, that's a rookie, I believe, right? At free safety. So, I mean, you really have to like your chances there. I think you're praising their secondary too much. And now that I've said that, look, we went into that game last week, the Seattle Seahawks corners had only had not intercepted a pass all season. And we saw what happened there. Vonta's not likely to change sides, so that means you can shift Antonio Brown around and get him a favorable matchup in that game. You look at their linebackers, David. Doesn't look like Jarrell Freeman is going to play. Their inside guy. That's a huge loss there. They're not a front that blitzes a lot, at least from what I've seen. So that's another thing in the Steelers' favor is if they don't, they're not a truly dominating, overpowering front. You know, I think Trent Cole's really the most imposing guy as a pass rusher there. this team has given up, David, 46, I think, plays of 20 yards or more through the air. They're tied with the Saints for the lead. In short, you know, I think if the offensive line gives Ben Roethlisberger time, he's going to torch them for some big plays. I mean, we could be talking about, you know, rattling off 10 explosive passing plays, maybe, for Roethlisberger and the Steelers offense in this game. And they should be able to run the football on them with D'Angelo Williams. They should be able to get D'Angelo the ball out of the backfield. As long as they don't turn the football over, there's absolutely no reason to think that this offense can't score 31 points.
Yeah, no, you hit it right on. I think you actually said it even better on Wednesday. That, you know, we're talking about 40 to 45 points. So they're leaving points on the field. I mean, look, you know, regardless of the game in-game strategy that Mike Tomlin used, the Steelers, you know, twice left the ball inside the three-yard line. So, you know, that's 8 points that, you know, they put 30 up, and that's eight that they potentially could have had. They turned it over let's say they turned it over two times that were significant. I mean, obviously the fake field goal, that hurt, and that's points on the board there that could have been three, could have been seven. So, you know, assuming that this team is going to score 30 is a fair assumption from now on. They've done it three straight weeks. The defense that they're facing that's going to be imposing comes up in 2 weeks against Denver. Cincinnati's defense is good. But they're going to play three not great defenses here in the last 5 weeks, and the offense has to make sure they win this game.
Their defense almost kind of somewhat reminds you of the Steelers. They wait back and just try to, you know, hang on and tackle the catch and you know, kind of let you dictate what you want to do to them and hope that they can get some turnovers.
So, Dave, let me give you one thing and we'll get our picks in because we're running in here. Looking at some of these numbers, let me just read you a stat that might surprise you a little bit if you weren't looking right at it. On the season, D'Angelo Williams, 115 carries. On the season, before obviously he went on IR, Le'Veon Bell, 113 carries. D'Angelo Williams, 563 yards. Le'Veon Bell, 556 yards. They're both at exactly a 4.9-yard average. Williams, 6 TDs. Bell, 3. Williams, 30 first down. Bell, 27. Their numbers are identical. And somebody said to me, okay, well, so the difference is in their receiving, right? D'Angelo Williams, 20 catches. Le'Veon Bell, 24 catches. D'Angelo Williams, 225 yards. Le'Veon Bell, 136 yards. So D'Angelo Williams has absolutely – kind of lived up to the production that people expected from Le'Veon Bell. And you look at the pass catching yards. I mean, he's getting 11 yards a catch. And you'll remember Le'Veon Bell in a couple of those games with, and look, I put this on the quarterback, a couple of those games with Mike Vick and Landry Jones. He's getting five catches for 7 yards because they're throwing it to him in the backfield and the other team's just waiting on it. So not dissing Le'Veon Bell here in any way at all. But just showing that D'Angelo Williams has absolutely, 11 yards a catch out of the backfield. I mean, that's extraordinarily good stuff.
And let's not forget what D'Angelo does without the football, in his hands.
Jack you up.
He will put you on your keister for sure. He did it to Michael Bennett. He did it to Alden Smith a couple of games ago. He loves to chip, and you know that's the type of thing that you'd like out of. Yeah, I mean, how nice would it have been? Would it have made a difference last year against Baltimore to have D'Angelo Williams?
Yeah, I mean, Le'Veon Bell didn't put up numbers in either game, so I hate to say that it would have been that difference because he didn't have good numbers. So. But certainly, you know, it gives you another, you know, a better player. I mean, so having a better player helps you, yeah.
D'Angelo also, how many catches did he have just last week? 8 or 9? It tied his career high in receptions in a single game. You believe that?
Wait, give me that one more time.
His receptions last week tied his career high. In a single game.
How many did he have?
He had
seven targets.
Seven for 88 And that tied his career high for receptions in a single game.
Yeah, that's unsurprising.
You would have thought he would have been used a little bit more than that in a single game. Although, you know, he did split time all those years with Stewart and those guys in Carolina there. So here's something else that I wrote. I know we got to move on here. With 105 more yards from scrimmage, David, D'Angelo will pass Earl Campbell on the all-purpose yardage list.
Where's that put him?
Let's see. Currently, he's 141st on the all-time leaders list for all-purpose yards.
And how much will 500 all-purpose yards move him up the rest of the year? If you got 500, if you got 100 all-purpose yards a game.
I'm not looking at the list right now. Gotcha. Don't have that committed to memory. But
fair enough. Well, let's roll into the games, because there was one last night that you want to talk about it, one play that they're going to look back if they make the playoffs, and that will be the play. I mean, a 61-yard Hail Mary, 62, whatever it was. Aaron Rodgers fires it up there. All the Lions defensive backs are 3 yards deep in the end zone, and who was it? Rodgers?
Yeah, Richard Rodgers.
Rodgers goes up and makes a really good hands catch at the apex of his jump. To do it. He high points it as much as he can, and no Lions player gets a hand on his arms as he's bringing the ball in, and he falls down in the end zone, and they win the game. And it's a Lions team that had won 3 in a row, Packers team that lost 4 or 5. I really felt like their season was done. The Lions were up 20-0 in that game and ended up losing it. And, you know, we talk about all the bad things that happened in Cleveland. I mean, the Lions fans feel exactly the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. help my bottom line as well, too.
All right. So, okay, Dave, 1 o'clock game. San Francisco's at Chicago. Chicago by 7.5. Blaine Gabbert's been surprisingly okay. I mean, he hasn't been a tire fire. But I'll take the Bears. They've been playing pretty good, much better football than I expected. Great job by John Fox, and Adam Gase is going to get a head coaching job out of this.
Yeah, I'm seeing 7. You want to go with 7 or 7.5?
7.5.
You seeing 7.5? Well, that's a – That last little hook there. I think Blaine Gabbert's done a good job, but I think Chicago at home is going to be too tough. Let's take Chicago to cover that 7.5.
Browns at home getting 9 against the Bengals. I'll take the Browns. I'm shocked that they're not playing Johnny Manziel. I actually think it's a big mistake not to play Johnny Manziel. It's, you know, regardless of the off the field stuff, you got to think about the future of the team and what you're going to learn. Austin Davis played great. He played great for whatever it was, the quarter that he was in there, and gave him a chance to win the game. He made a boneheaded decision to slide, and that, you know, that was really costly. But 9 seems like too many to me. I'd say it's a competitive game.
Oh, man, I'll be surprised if it's competitive. And I need to make up some ground on you, so I'm taking Cincinnati late to 9.
Jags getting to 2.5 in Tennessee. I'll take the Jags.
I'm going to take Tennessee. They're banged up. Allen Hurns, I think, is not going to play. I think Toby Gerhardt's going to miss the game. I think Tennessee's going to handle them by a field goal here. So give me Tennessee to cover.
Huge game in Buffalo for the Texans and the Bills. And if you're a Steelers fan, I think you're rooting for the Texans here. If the Steelers take care of Indy, then that gives the Texans a chance to kind of win the division, and the Steelers would have the head-to-head in a wild card with Indy. They don't play the Texans. I love the Bills a lot, but I'm going to take the Texans +3. They're playing good football now.
Yeah, I think that run's going to come to an end here in Buffalo. I think Rex Ryan will be ready for them with that defense. If I'm Houston, though, I try to take away Sammy Watkins and make Tyrod Taylor do something else there. But regardless, I think Buffalo covers this one.
Okay, Miami against the Ravens, Miami -3.5. I'll take the Dolphins. I mean, it's been a bit of a disaster. They fired their offensive coordinator, 8 carries for 8 yards when they want to be a power running team in the last game against the Jets. It wasn't pretty, but I think they turned it around a little bit this week with the new OC. So I'll take the Dolphins -3.5.
Man, banged up too, aren't they? I think both these teams are banged up, but I think Harbaugh's going to get just enough out of his team here, and if they lose, you're showing 3.5 or 4?
3.5.
Yeah, I think they keep it close enough. Even if they lose, they lose by a field goal. They just they seem to lose. If they do lose, that's the number they seem to lose by. So give me Baltimore plus the points.
Carolina -7 at the Saints. This, you know, home field at the Saints doesn't mean anything anymore. And you know, once in a while they put together a good game, but I'll take Carolina's defense shutting them down and putting up enough points. I'll lay the 7 on the road, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Dave, but I'll lay the 7 in the Superdome.
Yeah, I'm going to do that as well, too. Their defense is just so good, and Carolina and New Orleans, their defense isn't. And you know, you would think at one point maybe Drew Brees would be worth a little bit more than that, but right now I don't think he is. So give me Carolina for that big line on the road to cover.
Saints should trade Drew Brees. They should have traded him. It's easy to say now. They should have traded him before the season. If he's willing to move, they should look to move him. The Vikings plus 1.5 against Seattle. Huge game. Huge, huge game. I think Adrian Peterson runs the ball. I think the Vikings defense is good, and I think they shut down the Seahawks offense. That'll be interesting for us to watch, having just seen them. I'll take the Vikings plus the 1.5 at home.
No, not me. I think you're going to see Seattle run a few off here, and because of that, give me Seattle on the road to win this by a touchdown.
Arizona at St. Louis, Arizona -6. Jeff Fisher's going to lose his job. This team has imploded. Foles is back at quarterback. It's just disappointing to see. I mean, they can't do anything with the power run game. They've gotten bad quarterback play, and their defense, their vaunted defense, has just not been there. Hadn't been good enough. I'll take the Cards in maybe another blowout.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know about blowout, but I think they can win it by a touchdown here for sure. So give me Arizona on the road to cover.
Falcons have imploded, and Tampa Bay's going the other direction. Arrow's pointing up, man. They're giving one at home to the Falcons. I'll take Tampa Bay. I like what Jameis Winston's doing. That we talked about Doug Martin. You know, this is good news for that franchise for a change.
Man, Atlanta can't lose another one, can they?
Atlanta's my Philadelphia for you.
I just, you know, I admit Matt Ryan's not an elite guy, but I mean, he does have those games that make you think that maybe he should be. I think this might be one of those games for him. So give me Atlanta to win this outright and cover that.
Giants, Jets, both playing in MetLife Stadium. The Giants are technically the home team. This is a really interesting matchup. Huge game, obviously, for both teams. The Giants with a terrible loss to the Skins. Dave, the Jets are a 2.5-point favorite. I'm going to take the Jets. I still think they're a dangerous team. You know, I don't know. I don't want to say their season's complete, but either of these teams' season's completely on the line. But Steeler fans should be rooting for the Giants, but I'm going to take the Jets.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Giants to win this outright and cover.
Denver at San Diego, Denver -3.5. Give me the Broncos.
Yeah, that's hard to go against that. Brock's looking good so far in that defense. Phillip Rivers might be on his back a lot in this game, so give me Denver to cover that one on the road.
Another huge matchup that impacts the Steelers, Kansas City at Oakland. Oakland's playing for their lives to be in the conversation even. They've been a huge disappointment since putting up 35 against the Steelers, having lost 3 in a row, I think. Kansas City's won 5 in a row. As I said Wednesday, they might run the table. They're laying 3. I'm laying 3.
Not so fast, my friend.
I hope you're right.
I do too. I think David Carr, Amari Cooper, I think they get it together this week. Give me Oakland to win at home.
Eagles Depot has become a Tire Fire Depot. +9 in New England. That doesn't seem like enough. They're awful right now. The Patriots are a good football team. They're coming off a loss. I expect them to be ready and win this comfortably. I'll take the Pats -9.
I think you could sign with the Patriots and catch 6 balls for 84 yards and a touchdown. Seems like they just no matter who they plug in there, they get it done. I can't see this. I can't see the Eagles making a game out of this. Give me New England to cover this at home.
Washington -4 Monday night. Huge game for them. They against the Cowboys, Kirk Cousins, and they've been really good at home. I'll take the Skins -4.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd take the Cowboys there. And to make this interesting, I am going to take the Cowboys here. Matt Castle and all, right? So I think Dez has a big game this time around. Give me the Cowboys not only to cover, but to win this outright.
Okay. Steelers-Colts, Dave. Look, it's a must-win. I think they do win. I think they get kind of all the offense that we've been talking about that continues to show up. I guess the defense plays a little bit better, although, you know, Matt Hasselbeck has been really good. But I think the Steelers' offense carries the day here, and they're laying 7, and they cover this one 36-24.
It should be 41-10 in this game, but it won't be. It'll be Steelers 31, Colts 20.
All right, we're on the same page there. We got to wrap it up.
All right, you follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We'll go over a few other donations that came in on Monday's show as well. If you want to do that and donate, SteelersDepot.com. There's a donate button up top there. We appreciate that. Getting close to Christmas as well, too. Hope everybody's having a great holiday there. David, we're right up against us. Get us out of here.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.